with me this morning. Let's go to Luke, the 13th chapter. Luke, the 13th chapter. Please just continue to pray. We're in no rush there. They've already got what they need without even having to hear the word. God already had already met them before we got here. That's the best way to have the day. Luke, the 13th chapter. And I want to speak this morning on this thought, straighten up. Just straighten up. Now, that's a phrase that, as when I was a kid, I would hear all the time. My dad said, "Boy, you better straighten up now." Anybody ever hear that phrase? Ever get a similar version of that phrase? You better straighten up. Maybe as you gotten older, somebody as a friend will look at you and say, "Look, now you need to straighten up. You need to grow up. You need to do better. You need to quit acting the way you're acting." And in a lot of ways, we can do that. And in a lot of ways, we can change some things about us. We may even start going to church, or we may start reading our Bibles, or we may start trying to diet or exercise, or whatever we can do. We may even try to quit hanging around certain people. And we will put all the things in our lives to try to allow ourselves to straighten up. One of the most discouraging points in life is when we have done everything we know we can do. And it doesn't matter then if Pastor Lott says, "Guys, we need to do better. I'm doing all I can do." It doesn't matter if somebody in our family says, "Look, you just need to try. Look, I've done all I can do. I'm as straight, I'm as stood up as I can be. You don't understand. I'm frustrated with myself probably more than you are. I have to live with myself. I have to live with these actions. I have to live with some of these addictions. I have to live with some of these problems. I have to live with some of these family issues. And believe me, if I could change the rest of it, I would. But the problem is that I can't. I've done everything I can do." In Luke, the 13th chapter, Jesus is dealing with, on a Sabbath day, on a church day, He's dealing with this issue of being able to come fully out of what is going on in your life. Now, we as religious people, like I said, we're quick to tell people to line them out. "You need to do this, you need to do that, and you need to fix it." And in their culture, the Sabbath had become that type of day. It wasn't a day of deliverance. It wasn't a day of rejoicing. It wasn't a day of being set free. It was a day that we are to look like we're set free. We are to pretend we're set free. We are to go through the motions of being set free. But the reality is, nobody gets free. In fact, we will even get mad at you for allowing someone to go free. It had gotten to such a ritual that even the thought of doing anything to help someone go free would be considered wrong. Even though this day is to be a day when we spend with the Lord, it's a day when we are to rest from all of our works and all of our trials and all of our difficulties and allow God to straighten us again. That's really what Sundays are supposed to be. They are celebrations of all that we've been through. And they are moments of straightening the things that are yet to be straight in our life. Very few of us get up on Sunday and come with the mindset of today. Today I am finally getting rid of that thing. Today I'm finally walking out of that. Today I'm going to lay that worry down. Today I'm going to give it to the Lord. Today I'm going to... Instead, we show up. It's my job to try to pick at that thing and pick it bad enough so it bothers you enough so that then you will deal with it. Now, I only got two options if I do that. Either you're going to get picked at and you're going to walk out mad at me because that's all he ever talks about is that, 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 that. Every time I come, that's all he talks about. It's like he just keeps picking at me. I know what he said. I heard him say that, and I know he meant me when he said it. I don't even know if I'm coming back no more. So I have that option because you already knew when you got up this morning the area that needed to have been dealt with, that needs to be worked on. But instead of getting up with a mindset that today I am moving forward in this area, you just don't want to touch it. Now there is a second option, usually, and those are wonderful moments when we see them. Someone comes here, someone sits down, songs begin to pick at it, I begin to pick at it, and you listen to God, you make a move, and you deal with it. Then why, Brother Lott, is it so difficult to make that move, if that's as simple as it is? It's because so many of us in this room have tried in our own selves, our own way, to deal with that issue. Whether it's thoughts, whether it's actions. And we finally reach a point in our life, even though we're sitting here this morning, we reach a point in our life where I just can't do anything about it. It's just the way it is. It will always, my marriage will always be this way. I'm always going to hurt like this. I'm always going to be in this. You know what? Some things you just have to live with. And we settle in our minds a mindset that it's just the way it was meant to be. There's a lady in chapter 13 who probably can relate to you better than anybody else. Here's a church-going lady. Here's a woman that is in love with God. She has done absolutely nothing that we know of is wrong. She has done absolutely nothing in herself, but yet in her life something is happening that she can't straighten up herself. She can't do anything about, even though she tries, even though she's done everything in her ability. Go with me to the 10th verse of chapter 13 and let's look at this lady. As he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, look at the person beside you and say, it was a church day. Yeah. And behold, there was a woman which had a spirit of infirmity 18 years. Look at that person beside you and say, a long time. Now, it had not driven her out of church. It had not caused her to quit. It had not caused her to cuss God and say, I'm just not going back. It had just simply put her in a state to where her life was noticeably crooked. Her life was bent. And if you hung around her very long, you would notice it. And that's our biggest fear, is that here we are, we go to church, we do this, we're going through all the motions. But if you hung out with me very long, you would notice that at times I lose my temper and I cuss a little bit. If you hung around me very long, you would notice that I have some problems and some issues and I have some nerve problems and I have some depression problems and I've got some issues in my life. It's best that I just don't get too close to you and that you just don't know these things about me. Now, it's not that I'm going to quit God. It's not that I'm going to stop. It's just that for year after year after year, I've said I'm going to do better. I've had counseling with pastor. I've done everything I know to do. I've gone through every type of counseling situation. I've taped self-help tapes. I've listened to videos and I've done everything, but it has not straightened out the issue in my life. I am not healed yet. I am not delivered yet. My marriage isn't fixed yet. There doesn't seem to be an answer that's come. And for year after year, I'm still in a crooked, noticeable position. That's why people come to church. That's why they zap out. It's not because they don't like you. It's because you're going to notice the deformity of their life. You're going to notice if you hang around them, they're not together. And it terrifies them. What would you do with that information? Here's a woman who was deformed, who was bent over, could not straighten up. Her limbs had withdrawn. Everything, she could not hide it. Can you imagine the jokes? You don't eat your cereal, you're going to end up like Miss So-and-so. Don't even act like you don't do things like that. We know that person who's got a problem, and if you don't act right now, look what God did to her.
He's going to do it to you. They can't hide the deformity. They can't defend it. If it was a matter of trying to straighten up, they would do it. But there is a spirit that has come upon them that's stronger than them. And there are times in our lives where there are spirits that come upon us. But Lord, I'm not demon possessed. No. But you are oppressed. No matter how many scriptures you quote, that spirit won't leave. No matter how many times you fasted, that spirit won't leave. And you don't get better. You get sicker. You don't get stronger. You go into deeper depression. And the first thing you're going to have to understand is that if it was in your ability to do it, it would already be done. But it's not. It is a spiritual battle that is taking place, and that spirit is stronger than you. That spirit is stronger than you. That's why you see pastors or ministers who fall, and it's like, we didn't know. Can I tell you why that is? Is because the fear of that pastor or the fear of that person is that you will not see them as strong. That they have a weak spot or a problem. And it is better to hide it, to not deal with it, or to just keep trying to straighten up even though I know I can't. And so that's why when it finally blows up, it's a catastrophe. And that's the way it works in our lives. On smaller scales. You're not going to be in front of a pulpit where hundreds or thousands of people are going to see you, but your family's going to see it, or your relatives will see it, or the people you work with will see it. And our fear is that this thing that I cannot straighten myself out of will be noticed. First step of this is to get past the understanding that I will deal with it, or it will go away, or it will... Now, this lady for 16 years, if she could have found a way to straighten up, found a way to fix her physical problem, she would have. But there was a spiritual problem that was an infirmity upon her that was not going to let her go. She was crooked. She was bent. She was flawed. There was no hiding it. It had gotten so physically noticeable that Jesus couldn't help but notice it when the moment she came into His eyesight. For 18 years was bowed together or bent over and could in no wise lift up herself. She couldn't raise herself. She couldn't do it her own self. That's a bad position to be in. This morning there are people in this room that are bent. And no matter how hard they try, no matter how much effort they put into it, they cannot straighten themselves. It's an impossibility. I don't want to hear that. Well, it's tough because it is. Take it from somebody who's been bent. There is no amount of Scripture that will get you unbent. There's no amount of knowledge that will cause you to be unbent. There's only one action that must take place, and this is it. Number one, I must notice that my case is a helpless case. Look at that person beside you and tell them, when you're bent, you are helpless. Now that just burns at us in every way. Because we can dress to cover the bent. Yep. But you're still bent. I can come up with things to talk about other than my bentness, but you're still bent. It is a helpless place to be bent. Now that's not bad.
It's just a mindset that I must have if I'm ever going to move forward in my life. That I, within myself and my abilities and my reasoning and my strategies, will leave me helpless to cure the problem.
Well, then what? Then we may act anxious. Number two. If I am helpless and I've realized that I'm helpless, then I must strategically, or I must make a decision on who or what will be the remedy. Now, this lady could have chosen anything. She could have gotten mad at anything. She could have gotten upset at her family because maybe they were bent and they passed that on to her. She could have gotten mad at the priest because she's been coming there, giving her alms every single Sabbath. And yet here she is 16 years later, not any better. And she could have said, I'm sick and tired of coming to this Sabbath day. And I'm tired of coming here and worshiping. And I'm tired of this because the more I come, the less it seems to help. She could have become a hermit. She could have said, I'm just mad at everybody, and I don't trust nobody, and I'm just going to live on my own and by myself, and I'm going to deal with it myself. She could have made any choice she wanted, but the one choice she made was the ability to allow her life to change. And that was the fact that she remained, even on the Sabbath day, 16 years later, she is still there on the Sabbath day waiting for God to do something that she knows she's helpless to do herself. See, this morning, you're in a good place. You're in a powerful place. She had waited all of those years waiting for something to change and something to happen and somehow for somebody or something to change in the situation that would allow her to finally go free. Because if you were to ask her, she would tell you, I can't do anything about this. I'm just stuck right here. I'm helpless to straighten up. I'm helpless to fix myself. I'm helpless to make myself right. And that is a humiliating position, but it is the awesomest position if you want to go free. It is the greatest position if you want to be useful. I get asked a lot, why do you think God uses you? And I guess the best strategy of that was this last week when I got to go Monday to Scott Central and just speak for a moment. There was five or six of us pastors and ministers. I happened to walk in last, which is normal. So they told me, Pastor Lott, would you close it out? Be happy to. And each ministry gets up and is doing a wonderful job. And my turn comes. I have no idea what I'm going to say. I don't have a Bible in my hand. I'm just there. I'm like, okay, God, it's your time. I'm helpless right now. I'm fixing to turn around to 100 or so teenagers who think I don't know anything already. And I'm going to try to tell them I do know something. I open my mouth. All I remember is as I'm talking, I'm crying. I close. I get to pray with one of the young ladies as she gives her heart to the Lord. And Taylor, I asked him later, I said, that's after school. I said, did anybody say anything? And I just want to know, I didn't embarrass you too bad, did I? And Taylor said, they couldn't understand why you were crying. They couldn't understand why you were crying. And Taylor said, They said it must have meant something to you. It is the ability to realize I am helpless that gives us the power to be useful. People meet people every day who think they know something. We meet people like that every day of our lives. But it is a rare commodity to meet someone who has no agenda, who has no game plan, no strategy, just simply waiting on God. My Aunt Marie, who we just buried, taught me that. I preached at the funeral. I'm kind of like the designated minister of funerals now, it seems like, with my family. And that's what I said that she taught me during that year and a half I spent with P.L. Me and P.L., we would get in the car to go visiting, and she wouldn't go with us. She'd get another lady to go with her. She'd get in her car and go visiting. We'd get in our car and go visiting. And man, we'd go do preacher things, and we'd go over and we'd pray for them and do all that kind of stuff. And man, we would come back and we got to pray with so-and-so and do this. And she'd come back with stories. She'd come back and say, well, I got to see Sister So-and-so. And we'd sit there and talk for a long time and just got a chance to, oh, she's going through this. And you could see me and P.L., you know, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know. But she was teaching us something, because she would say, they said they would try to be there Sunday. Of course, we knew the people she was visiting, and we would think as we looked at each other, yeah. Sure enough, Sunday morning, here they would come walking in. She'd be the first one to go run up, hug their neck. She would be the first one to... But what she had the unique ability to do was to realize that I am helpless to fix or to do or to straighten the things in my life. I can either pretend they're not there, I can imagine they'll go away, or I can allow somebody stronger, mightier than me to deal with them. This lady who for 16 years relied on one thing. She didn't go to soothsayers. She didn't go to any other type of medicine. The Bible doesn't speak of anything. But with her crooked back, she walked into that Sabbath day every single Saturday and sat there and heard a priest preach about healing and heard somebody talk about the mightiness of God and heard somebody, and she kept believing and kept holding and kept waiting for the moment when her life would be changed. She was anxious, but then she was invited. Notice with me. And when Jesus saw her, verse 12, He called her to Him and said to her, Woman, thou art loosed from thine infirmity. And He laid His hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. Do you understand what takes place on Sunday morning? We go at it like this. Boy, you could really feel God there this morning. You could really feel God. And we almost take it as though that's just a normal thing. I get to visit ever so often places and other churches, and believe me, there's a lot of places they would love to feel God. But we walk in and we expect it. We expect tears to flow. We expect people to go to altars. We expect somebody to be touched. We expect a miracle. We expect all this, because the thing is that when Jesus walks in the room, we have an expectation that now the same thing this lady had waited for all of her life for these 16 years, we get to face it every single Sunday. We walk in, and this morning as we begin to sing, His name is Jesus. There's healing in the name of Jesus. There's power in the
name of Jesus. And we're all standing there and we're all thinking about our problems and our situations and our circumstances and our dilemmas. And we're thinking to ourselves, do I want to deal with it? Do I not want to deal with it? Do I want to pray? Do I not want to pray? Am I ready? Am I not ready? I mean, I've lived with it this long. I just want to live. I mean, there's always next Sunday because God will be back next Sunday. And when He's back next Sunday, I can go then. I'll just give it one more week. They say it might get better. I haven't had as many problems with it lately, so I'm sure I'm getting better. But imagine if there was just one shot. Imagine if you're that lady and Jesus comes into the synagogue one time. And He looks over at you and He says, "Hey, come here." "Who, me? Come here. I want to talk to you." I don't know about that. Be healed. Be free. I give you the right now to go free from whatever it is. From the infirmity, from the spirit that has bound you and locked you down. I give you the ability to go free. Imagine those words after 16 years of wanting to hear those words. And not only does He say it, but He touches me. He takes His hands and He lays them upon me. And He says, "Listen to me now. Be healed." And at that moment, I have the ability to receive whatever it is that I have need of. Our problem is that we get it every single Sunday. Not that He walks in the room one time, but He walks in the room every single time. Which makes living with and going home with and having to face every day the same infirmity, it makes it seem that much worse. Because within this room today, Jesus has already said, "He whom the Son has set free is free indeed." He has already declared that we can go lay hands upon the sick and they... Because He's in the synagogue. He's in the church. He's in the building. Every single time. That's why He says, "Two touching anything and agreeing upon it, it is done." Because I'm in the building. Our problem is the same problem that they have. Do you know, as soon as Jesus healed this lady, as soon as He spoke healing into her life, as soon as she straightened up, the Bible says she straightened up, completely healed. Do you know that somebody, one of the men of the synagogue, looks at her and looks at Jesus and says, "How dare you do that?" How dare you bring healing and deliverance on the Sabbath day? This is a day we talk about it. This is a day we sing about it. This is a day we rehearse it. This is a day we go to Sunday school class and we teach about it. But it's not the day that it actually happens. How many times have you heard stories in the Bible of healings, deliverances, miracles? How many times have you been to a Sunday school class and drawn pictures when you were a little kid of Jesus walking on the water or Lazarus coming forth from the grave? If we're not careful, we become just like the people of that day. We go through all the motion, but with none of the results. And our lives, whatever they are crooked, whatever places are hurt, whatever places are scarred, and whatever places are wrong, we just bury them. And we live with them. But listen to me. Jesus has a statement
that I want you to hear.
Go with me to verse 15. And then answered him and said, "Thou hypocrite, doth not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his oxen or his ass from the stall and lead him away for watering? And ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan hath bound, lo, these 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" And when he had said these things, all his adversaries were "It's not necessary if you like me or not. I have a lot of adversaries. Each day when I get up, I know that. And it's not that they just hate me. It's just the fact of what I do on a day-to-day basis. And some of the biggest ones I've got are ministers. That's what's so funny. Like, what? I don't even know you. Never met. You've never even been to my church. And yet I'm a cult. That's the least of the things I'm called. And all I've ever done is pray for people and see people delivered. And then it hits me. That's why. Because there's places that will talk about loving everybody, but they wouldn't want you to come there. They may sing about it, but they don't want you there. There may be places that sing about healing, but they're not going to be praying for you. And Jesus says, "Listen to me. It's right for somebody who has been bound and locked up to go free. I don't really care what it looks like. I really don't care most of the time what people think. It's like that one young lady Monday when I get to pray for her. And she comes walking up and she says, 'I don't know him.' And I smile and I say, 'You're in a good place.' I really could care less whether they think I ought not cry or I ought not share my stories. I don't care if people get mad at me because I play myself a lot of times. It's just not very smart. Even my mom gets on to me. She'll say, 'Tim, you always tell you were this time.' I said, 'Mom, what were my grades?' 'Yeah, but you don't have to do that.' Like, 'Yeah, I do. I have to do that because if I've never been set free, how can I tell somebody that they can go free? And if I don't rehearse in my mind what it's like to go free, then where is the desire of mine to watch someone go free? It's because I know where God brought me that I want God to take someone else there. It's because I know what it was like to go from being bound and bowed over to being able to stand up straight that I want someone else to know what that feels like. I'll say it this way and I'm through. This week I had a counseling session with a young man. Just a young man. Several weeks ago we met one time and I'd give him a couple of things he needed to do. I said, "Do these and we'll come back and we'll talk." Needless to say, he didn't do them. We sat down last week and as we sat there, I wrote down where life will be. I just asked him a few questions. I said, "Tell me how you want life to play out." And he listed 6 different things. "Here's how I want to go." And then I just plugged in where he's living right now and the life that he had, and I showed him that 3 of them automatically wouldn't happen. And that the other three were going to happen opposite of the way he wanted them. And I said, here's the way you're going. Well, the hardest thing I can do for somebody at that moment is I want to just grab them and I want to shake them. You ever get like that? But I have to look across that table and I have to say, son, the only person that can change this is you. You have to make a choice and a decision. And you're going to have to live with those decisions. It's not pretty and it's not fancy, but it's the truth. And everything in me wants more than anything for him to know what it's like. Because I look at him and I told him this. I said, son, I have a beautiful wife I'm going home to. I have a home. A house. I have three kids. I have a job. I have all those things you've listed on this piece of paper. Your decision is to either listen to somebody who's been there or not. The greatest testimony we have is to be able to look at somebody with tears in our eyes and be able to say, I once was crooked, but now I'm straight. I once was lost, but now I'm found. That is the most powerful statement we have. It's not whether we came to church this morning. It's not whether we just go through the motions. It's whether we can look someone in the eyes and say, I have what you're looking for. If you're in this place today, this message this morning was not to be exciting. Not to be stirring. There are some people in this room and will be in the next service that God's dealing with. And you've got some areas in your life that are not straight. And I want to say this to you very honestly. The only person that can do anything about it is you and God. You can come to church for the next 16 years. And you might even feel better because you're going to hear this or sing about this, but you'll still be crooked. There comes a moment in your life where you finally have to say, God, today, I want to go free. He's the only one you can cry out to. He's the only one you can call to. And He's the only one that can do it. Will you stand?